Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Charya Ashtotara Sutasya Srimadhe Zavayam Graysaisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bonum, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows the universal form within his mouth. Text number 17. Puranena Vrajapate. And 18. Okay, so we probably have to read 18. So we read 18 together. Ya etasmin mahabhaga priti kurbanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnupakshan ivasura Jaetasmin mahabhagat Pritin kurubanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnupaksham ivasurah Jaetasmin mahabhaga Pritim kurbanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnupakshan Ivasura. Please chant. Ya etasmin mahabhaga Prittin kurvanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnupakshan ivasura Ya etasmin mahabhaga Pritin kurvanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnupakshan ivasura Ya etasmin mahabhaga Pritin kurvanti manava Narayo vibhavantyetam Vishnu Pakshan Ivasura. I read the previous verse and then the word by word of this. Puranena Vrajapate Shadabo Dashopidita Arajake Rakshamana Jigjur Dashyun Dashyun Samedita. Translation. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to protect the people and enable them to flourish. He curbed the rogues and thieves. Purport. Indra is the king of the universe. Demons, thieves, and rogues always disturb Indra. Indradi Vyakulam Lokam. But when Indradis, the enemies of Indra, become prominent, Krishna appear. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swajan Indradi Vyakulam Lokam. Mridayanti Yuge Yuge. Bhagavatam 1.3.28. And today's verse. Ya etashmin mahabhaga pritin kurbanti manava narayo vivabanti eta Vishnu paksham ivashura. And this is a word by word and translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Ye, those persons who etashmin, unto this child, Mahabhaga, very fortunate, pritin, affection, kurvanti, execute, manava, such persons, na, not, araja, the enemies, abhibhavanti, do overcome etam, those who are attached to Krishna, Vishnu Paksham, the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side, Eva, like Asuraha, the demons. Translation. The demons, asuras, cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate because such persons are very much affectionate toward Krishna. They cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa or the internal enemies, the senses. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurubhe Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Rupa Swami Tinare Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Satarine Bancha kalpa tarubhyasya kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So the word purana is mentioned in these verses. The word purana, Sanskrit, means history. So the understanding is that these Vedic narrations are historical accounts of this earthly realm. Actually, no, sorry, I correct myself. These are historical accounts of this material world, this cosmic manifestation. It's universal history. which for people, in common people, modern common people, is beyond their understanding and conception. So the common, a very common understanding of the Vedas is that they have these two powers. They have the philosophy power that are written in Sanskrit, and there are a series of mantras that contain very deep philosophical concepts. And then there's the Puranas, which are the historical narrations. So the Puranas are considered to be mythological. Some imaginary narrations that are meant to convey the difficult subjects of philosophy that are contained in the mantras of the Vedas. So they are not considered historical fact, they're considered mythology. And it's the way that the modern man can actually make sense of these extraordinary narrations of the Puranas that depict different appearance of the personality of Godhead in different forms, including the form of a fish, the form of a tortoise, and the form of a boar. And these narrations of different planetary systems, a whole structure of the universe, and the presence of these great personalities and controllers like demigods, the presence of powerful demons that are constantly threatening the peace of the order of the universe. So to make sense of these extraordinary narrations, then they consider them mythological, because it's beyond the experience of a common man. But the narrations of both is actually not only the Puranas, it's Puranas and Itihasas. They are factual historical events that has been recorded. According to, to modern man, written that to be able to consider something historical, it have to be recorded, it have to be written, it have to be passed like that. So that's how history is being passed down through generations. Before man being able to write things, so civilization starts when man start to have forms of communication, modern civilization, or like I say, modern man, or civilized man. When there is this type of communication, even if it was in a form that it was very rudimentary. Even if it was very rudimentary, but it was a form of communication. It was written some form of communication. So we see that when modern man actually evolved to be able to write these jeroglyphics type of things. That was a form of communication, of recorded history. So people go into these caves and then find, you know, some little draws of man's, you know, shooting at a buffalo or something like that, some sort of an animal. So that is recorded. So that creates a sense, okay, this is what man used to do during this time. They used to be hunters, like that. And they use this type of weapons. They use, you know, some spears and things like that. So history is communicating through this written. And that's when actual civilization or modern man becomes manifest. So the question is that one can take the Vedas as the product of a civilization, and the Vedas speak about, you know, those particular times in which was written, but also speaks of previous times with these extraordinary events that of these civilizations that goes beyond this, you know, the realm that we live right now, but it was, you know, part of a whole universal, you know, narration. So the question is that if I'm a person that I've been presented this, and I can question, so why there was no written, you know, something written during those times by these great civilizations? Why the history that is before Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas into a written form, why there was not, you know, previous written documents that tell us about those times? If it was all this, you know, very advanced civilization that is described in the Vedas, that goes all the way to the time of creation. Not only that, it goes millions and millions and millions and millions of years back. When in modern times, we know that millions of years back, there was no civilization. There was just, you know, a very prehistoric life forms. That's our idea. So it means that all these narrations that are of all these great things, they have to be mythos. They have to be made up. The question is, why do you make a story like that? And it's in order to communicate a message. So therefore, mythology. But the fact is that they're historical. And the explanation is that previously, the capacity of mankind was much more higher. So there was no need of the actually in Vedic time, from the Vedic perspective, books are a necessity for a much less for mankind that have a lesser capacity of absorbing the philosophical subject matters, transcendental knowledge, or even any type of knowledge. So it has to do with a particular time. So books are necessary in Kali Yuga, because man of Kali Yuga, it is described that their capacity of learning and their capacity of memorizing, their capacity of absorbing is quite diminished. Manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya upadrita. The descriptions of man are given in Bhagavatam that their capacity diminished, not only on absorbing subject matters and knowledge, but also the lifespan and their mental stability. And that's a symptom of man in Kali Yuga. So written books are necessary. Before that, mankind has the capacity of absorbing just by hearing. So there was no need for books, because simply by listening, you absorb the subject matter and you're able to retain it. And that's how these narrations, this historical narration, was passed down through generations, like that. So the Puranas are the way the Puranas came about. Also, it was designed by Vyasadev. And again, put it into the context that Vyasadev compiled the Vedas when he was observing that Kali Yuga was approaching. And then he could understand the symptoms that Kali Yuga will have, or the influence, sorry, that Kali Yuga will have on man, and thus he decided to compile the Vedas in a written form. So first, he did the four Vedas. He divided the whole Vedic knowledge in four. And these are the series of mantras that is basically contains everything that is there within the material world, both spiritually and material. Everything to be known, everything that explains about the whole cosmic manifestation, creation, every single aspect. And these are mantras, and these mantras originally come from the personality of Godhead. And these Vedas originally is perceived by the first personality in the material world, Lord Brahma, and he hears first in the form of the sound of Krishna's flute, and then that sound expands into the whole Vedic knowledge. So, and that whole Vedic knowledge is required for Brahma, who is going to be the engineer of the whole the whole cosmic manifestation, this universe. So that whole knowledge, the Vedas, then was transmitted by Lord Brahma to his sons, and like that, in such a way that it started to come down from one teacher to a disciple, and so on. We, you know, it's the parampara, or the disciplic succession. So in our particular disciplic succession, Lord Brahma gave this Vedic knowledge to Narada, and Narada passed it to Vyasadeva. So Vyasadev then took this all this knowledge of the Vedas and then divided into four. And then he compiled the Vedanta Sutras, which is, the Vedas are very, very vast, so he put all the knowledge of the Vedas in codes into one book, but only with codes. And in each code, there was all this huge amount, I mean, volumes of concepts and knowledge just within one code. An example of one of these codes is Atato Brahma Jigyasa, which was the first aphorism and the first code. Now that you have this human birth, you must inquire about transcendence. So from that, then volumes, you know, then you can actually expand it or into volumes of understandings and knowledge. So Vyasadev could understand that this type of presentation, the four Vedas and the Vedanta Sutras and the Upanishads, these are the Upanishads he compiled also, which was complementary to the Vedas and to the Brahma Sutras. So this was meant for highly elevated people. Highly elevated people, extremely qualified people. But then what about common people, like Sudras, like Vaishyas? What about the rest, that whole part of society, Vyasadeva was thinking? So for less qualified people, then he compiled the Puranas. So now historical events. Through history, then one can learn the principles, one can learn values. And the history, the narrations of great personalities, and the narrations especially of the appearance of the Lord in this world. Through different times, different spaces, different circumstances. And then through those narrations, the teachings of the Vedas, or the essence of the Vedas, is taught. Because again, the activities of great people teach the values. Those who represent the values of the Vedas, and who is the greatest representative? Is the personality of Godhead. He is the one from which all this knowledge comes. He is the one who established the principles of religion. Dharmanstu Shakshat Bhagavan Pranitam. The Bhagavatam tells us that it is he who established the principles of religion, the personality of Godhead. So the Puranas were compiled, the Puranas and Itihasas, and in turn the Mahabharata, were compiled for the lesser class of people, the less qualified type of people, so they can get the same principles, the same knowledge through these historical facts, these historical events. So there are 18 Puranas that are compiled by Srila Vyasadev, 6 Puranas in the mode of goodness, 6 Puranas in the mode of passion, and 6 Puranas in the mode of ignorance. So they're addressed to different also classes of people that are influenced by a particular mode of nature. The Puranas will be the Brahma Purana, the Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, Shiva Purana, Linga Purana, Garuda Purana, Narada Purana, Bhagavan Purana, Agni Purana, Skanda Purana, Vavishya Purana, Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Markandeya Purana, Vamana Purana, Varaha Purana, Matsya Purana, Kurma Purana, and Brahmanda Purana. Those are 18 Puranas. The Puranas are considered the fifth Veda, according to Srila Vyasadeva. And the Puranas, among the Puranas, the top and the highest is the Bhagavad Purana, and which is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam was expanded by Vyasadeva after Narada Muni instructed him that he have to compile a Purana or a book, a narration that solely focus on the highest principle of religion. And that's what the Srimad Bhagavatam manifested. So the Srimad Bhagavatam have nothing, there's not a single aspect that contains some mixed principles of materialism in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the spotless Purana as described by Srila Vyasadeva himself. It's a Purana that only, that anything that is motivated by some material desire or religion that have some mixed motivation, then that is out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Kaitava Dharma means mixed religion, or mixed religion with motivations. This is out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So there are 10, according to Srila Vyasadeva, actually in this case Srila Sukadeva Goswami, he explains that in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are 10 subject matters. In the 12th canto, chapter 7, the explanation of the Purana, of the Puranic literature is given, and Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains that within this, the Puranas, there is 10 subject matters. And specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is 10 subject matters that are presented. So, 12, chapter 7, text 9 to 10 says, O Brahmana, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to contain 10 characteristic topics. The creation of the this universe, the subsequent, that's one. Second, the subsequent creation of worlds and beings. Third, the maintenance of all living beings. Fourth, their sustenance. Five, the rule of various manus. Six, the dynasties of great kings. 7. The activities of such kings. 8. Annihilation. 9. Motivation and the supreme shelter. Motivation. And 10. The supreme shelter. Other scholars state that the great Puranas deal with these 10 topics, while lesser Puranas may deal with 5. So, these are the books of histories. This is the history of our universe. And that's what Garga Muni is bring into the attention of Nanda Maharaj, he says that, O Nanda Maharaj has recorded in history, Puranena Brajapate. Brajapate is Nanda Maharaj, king of Braja. Puranena. So, as recorded in history, this child, Krishna, appears every time there is an irregular or incapable government, or when Indra has been dethroned, or when people are being harassed and disturbed by thieves. At that time, Krishna appears to protect the people and to enable them to flourish. He curbs the rogues and thieves. So, the narration of the Puranas are filled with these activities of the Lord. He always is on the side of the demigods, and he's always on the side of the devotees. Therefore, the devotees can never be vanquished. They always will be protected by the Lord, and the demons always will be vanquished. So we hear that assurance in the Bhagavad Gita. The famous verses, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttaman adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Same principle Krishna explains. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice or descendants of Bharat and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. And then paritranaya sadunan vinashaya chaduskritan dharma san, what is it, sanstapanan sambhavami yuge yuge, to protect the devotees or to give pleasure to the devotees and to annihilate the demons, I descend millennium after millennium, and to establish the principles of religion, I descend millennium after millennium. So Krishna does that. When there's a decline in religious principles, adharma, then he comes to reestablish those principles. And Prabhupada highlight the word Srijami in the verse, in this verse, Srijamyaham, Tadatmanam Srijamyaham. At that time, Atmanam, self, Srijami, manifest, aham, I manifest. So the word Srijami means that the Lord on his own will, he's not obliged to come. But in his own accord, he decides, he comes. He comes on his own will to actually do these activities of reestablishing religious principles. It's explained, he doesn't need to do because he's all powerful. He can wipe out a whole bunch of demons by creating, by material nature. So you can have a huge disaster and then a whole bunch of something can happen. If Krishna wants to destroy a demon, you know, he goes to walk in the park and then a thunderbolt, you know, just hit the guy in the head and it's finished. So that could happen, You know, he can do that. But he does it personally. He comes personally. But he comes personally not for the purpose of killing the demon, but for the purpose of reciprocating with the devotees. Therefore, the main thing is about this paritranaya shadunam. And then Garga Rishi also, he says that to Nanda Maharaj. So he can be pacified and not worry about what Kamsa will do and Kamsa's associates. So he says, demons, asuras cannot harm demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to Krishna is extremely fortunate, Mahabhaga, because such persons are very much affectionate towards Krishna. They cannot be defeated by demons like the associates of Kamsa. So Garga Rishi is telling Nanda Maharaj here, this little boy Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So just as Lord Vishnu protects the demigods, Krishna will protect all his loving devotees. So he is establishing this fact, and he is explaining that this is recorded in history. And this is that same personality that is narrated through the historical events presented in the Puranas. So I stop here. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhuji. The battery is off. If you look up in that, then you see that little green light on one of those things. Just press that little button and then a battery comes out. You see the little light? There's a little button there, like a little switch thing. You press it down and then the battery comes out. Looks like it's a little loud. Also, number two, Jai Balarit. Just bring the switch down. Yes, bro.
The last line on the purport. So can you explain a little more? That is, Krishna, those who are attached with Krishna, they are protected even by, from the sense, internal senses, internal enemy and senses.
Oh, right.
Very nice.
Well, it's you know, we can understand that not only devotees get protected externally by demons, but also by internal enemies that are by the internal enemies, the senses, the desire, or the desire to enjoy through the senses, you know. So it's more the subtle part the internal part. Because if we use the senses for the service of Krishna, Atas Krishnanamadi, for the senses of Rishikesh, the master of the senses, it's all fine. The senses are they're not our enemies. But just like the king of the senses is the mind, and Krishna says that a mind that is not controlled is the enemy, and a mind that is controlled is a friend. So Krishna will also protect us for an uncontrolled mind, an uncontrolled senses that are afflicted by the greatest enemy, as he says in the third chapter, which is lust, which is the desire to enjoy through our senses and through our something like that.
And regarding Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam, in Canto 12, text number 12, chapter 13, text number 18, very nice verse is there. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. So how this very, very, it is a favorite book for Vaishnavas, and it is a spotless Purana. And in that verse it is stated, Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is especially dear to the Vaishnavas. It has knowledge that is especially appreciated by the Paramahansas. When carefully studied, heard, and understood again and again, it opens the door to pure devotion, through which one never returns to this bondage of the illusion. Mm. So very nice verse.
Yes, the famous verse established the importance of Srimad, the unique importance of Srimad Bhagavatam for humankind. Yes. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. You just iterated the point that is mentioned in this point, and I was gonna also mention some points I appreciated that in answering Karuna Nidhi's question, you were mentioning our greatest enemies aren't our enemies on the outside but on the inside. And a couple pastimes I mentioned, especially regarding Indra, but one pastime I appreciate is that Ramachandra Khan, he was envious of Haridasa Thakur, so in order to discredit his character, he sent the prostitutes to seduce him. But we see that Haridasa Thakur, he transformed the prostitute into a great Vaishnava. And we see that because he defeated his enemies on the inside, lust, he wasn't defeated by his enemy on the outside, Ramachandra Khan. So there's a nice quote that says, when there is no enemy within, the enemies outside cannot hurt you. Regarding Indra, this verse also mentions Indra, and we see that this verse particularly mentions that when thieves, rogues, and demons attack Indra, the Lord has to take his post. My understanding that Indra is not like a personality, it's a post. And we see that in most of the pastimes, Indra is really not removed by his external enemies. He's removed by his internal enemies. We see that politicians ascend in power by, same principle, by defeating their enemies on the outside. But then a few months later, they descend from power because they couldn't defeat their enemies on the inside. So I'll just mention a pastime of Govardhan Lila, since it's coming up. We see that Indra, like most of us, he was very proud and envious. So when Lord Krishna, as a 7-year-old boy, he told the residents of Vrindavan, don't worship Indra, he can understand Indra's motivation, because a lot of times when we practice Krishna consciousness, Krishna can see our motivation. But so Indra, even though he was considered a devotee of Krishna, he was very proud of being offered puja by the Lord. And so when Krishna said, don't worship Indra, he has to perform his prescribed duties anyway, etc. So Indra, he was almost removed from his position because he was envious of Krishna by Krishna's arrangement. Krishna was only a seven-year-old boy at the time, and he essentially said, you know, how can you listen to somebody who just got out of a kindergarten more than me? You're listening to, you know, practically a kindergarten more than me. So there's a nice quote by Martin Luther King. He says, nobody is unhappy about praise, even when they know they don't deserve it, or even when they don't believe it. The only people who aren't happy about praise is when that praise is going too much towards somebody else. And we see this theme appears again and again. Hiranyakashipu was envious when he told Prahlad, you're listening to Vishnu and Vaishnavas over me. Daksha was envious when his sons were listening to Narada Muni over him. And so, one last point I were mentioning is something you were mentioning. You were specifically talking about the Puranas, the histories of these pastimes. And there's a model that says, history repeats itself. And there's also a nice quote related to it. It says, the most important lesson of history is that we haven't learned any of history's lessons. We see these things repeated in the stories over and over again, but we still become intolerant of devotees, still intolerant and patient. And who do we become tolerant with? Those who arouse our senses. In the mother, in the pastime of Mohini, when the Lord incarnate as Mohini Murti to help the demigods, the demons, they said, the demigods are bad association. But then when they turn to Mohini, they say, Mohini, she's good association. Why? Because she aroused our senses. And so we're tolerant of people who arouse our senses and intolerant of people who don't arouse our senses. So same lesson throughout history. We can't even give happiness to ourselves. So we hear these things. So if I have to ask a question, my question is that even though we're reading these stories every day, we still fall into the same trap. So how does a person to rectify that, you know, keep making the same mistakes? We read about them, we see about them. Prabhupada mentions in the net of instruction, you know, a person performs sinful activity three ways. He hears that he'll get a reaction from doing it. He sees that he'll get a reaction from doing it. And he does the sinful activity and he still can't stop. So what are some steps we can move forward by reading about them, hearing about them, and actually doing them, getting reactions, still can't stop? So what do you say to a person, you know, who keep making the same mistakes over and over again?
Well, we have to move from nominal knowledge to realized knowledge. Because we have, that's, and it's natural, there's a progression in which you get knowledge. The first thing is to actually get the knowledge. And then it comes the application of that knowledge. And when you start to apply that knowledge, there's a period of time in which you start to get it. Oh, now this is how it is, you know. So that it becomes that knowledge from just nominal knowledge to apply the knowledge to realize the knowledge. So then now it becomes your experience. It's your experience. You realize it. When you realize it, that's when it really becomes yours. So we're in that process. It's a natural progression, but we have to apply ourselves to make that nominal knowledge realize. And it's a process. It's a process, and we have to apply the process. We have to apply it, and that's what we're right now. Sadhana Bhakti means apply knowledge. So by apply it, so then, you know, it's like Srila Sanatana Goswami breaks it down. What is it? Sambandha Prayojana and Abhide, you know. So one is knowledge, sambandha. Prayojana means apply, the application. And abhideya means, you know, the actual realize knowledge. So it's a natural progression. And we have to understand that we're going through a natural progression, but we have to apply ourselves to the process of sadhana, the application, and in that application we start to get the experience. Meaning, the particular thing is that we in sadhana stage is that we're becoming purified. You know, so we have to apply our sadhana, and the sadhana, the main purificatory activities of sadhana is hearing and chanting. So, you know, Nityam Bhagavata Sevayam Nashta Presha Vadreshu, you know, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. So this process of purification is there. And then it becomes realized. And then, you know, Sarvatma Snapanam. You know, then we fully realize our identity as Atma. And that's when we get there. Right. Anything else? Kyle? Kyle has a question. Okay, that's good. All right, thanks. Krishna Arjun?
Yeah, describe that the Puranas in the 666 division were specifically geared towards persons that were influenced by a particular nature. So I guess the question is the Itihashas, how is the division there?
The Itihashas, I think the Mahabharata falls into the Itihashas. Actually, I can't remember. I don't know if I have to look on that. Which exactly literatures are the Itihashas? You know? Karuna Nidhipur? Jai Baladev, if you remember? The Itihashas. Which literatures are the Itihashas? The Mahabharata and the Ramayana, no? Yes, okay. Yes, so the Ramayana and specifically like that. I have to, you know, look for sure, but, you know, that's also what I remember.
So they're the narrative ones?
Yeah, so especially the those two, Mahabharata is the narration of the whole, you know, history, through the narrations of the history of the dynasties of great kings. So the Mahabharata focuses a lot on the Moon Dynasty, and the Ramayana focuses a lot on the Sun Dynasty. Okay, thank you so much. Karantara Shiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.